to get back on the pitch was quite a remarkable achievement and something I'm very proud of. But ultimately, I wasn't able to do enough in my own mind to get back on the pitch. I couldn't start games. Nigel signed me at Burton to kind of be around the dressing room, kind of an older head, a more experienced head in a Burton side that are trying to challenge in the Championship. But ultimately, he only needed me for 5-10 minutes in games if teams were lumping the ball in the box, and he needed me to come on and head a few balls. But apart from that, I really, really struggled to get back into training regularly, to get through sessions without struggling with my knee. So ultimately, it kind of came down to a decision where, do I continue for another year and risk kind of making myself worse and being frustrated still, you know, sitting on the bench or in the stands for 6-7 seasons is tough to take, and it does take its toll. And I just made the decision. It was an easy decision, but it's still tough knowing that you're not going to play football again.
For people not aware, and I'm sure there aren't too many people who are not aware of the exact conversation we've just had about an injury, is it fair to say, Sean, that perhaps your injury is as severe a football injury that anybody has come back from to play any amount of moments on the pitch? I don't think many people expected to see you again, did they?
I don't think so, no. I'm pretty lucky to walk properly, to be honest. It was more of a car crash kind of injury. People say, what did you do? And they kind of think you've done your ACL, so they think you've done one cruciate, and I managed to do all of them. I had a crater in my bone, I had a patella dislocation, and all this was from one incident. And it took me 2 years to literally be able to do a really, really light job. So 2 years of rehabilitation on a daily basis for, you know, 10 hours a day over the course of the day, every day pretty much for 2 years, just to be able to do a light jog. So that kind of says exactly what I've had to get through to get back on the pitch again. I had a short period at Derby when Steve McLaren was in charge where I was training quite regularly. My knee was getting strong, the bones were strong, my ability to move, to function was really, really good. And that's the only thing that I'm disappointed I didn't, because I didn't get a chance at that opportunity. I probably could have started a game at that point, but the second that I got released from Derby, I had a year out of football and out of the game, and everything just diminished. So my strength, my control, my bones softened again. So all of that work that I'd done for 3.5 years kind of was out the window by the time that Nigel signed me at Burton. So I tried to get to the same level and I just couldn't. I was a couple of years, or was another year older, a year without being, without having the physio and the treatment and the rehab on a daily basis. And it was just too much to come back from, to play, to start games, to play regularly. But to get on a pitch at all was quite remarkable, really. And I always felt that I would. I told people that I'd play football again. People didn't believe me, but, and it wasn't a case of proving them wrong, it was just a case of proving me right. I enjoy challenges and I'm a positive person, so someone telling me I wasn't going to play again had no effect on me whatsoever. I had no concept of what the outside kind of world thought about my position and my knee and whether or not I could play professional football again. I believed I could, and it was a really, in a strange way, a really enjoyable journey for me, really enjoyable. It was tough. It was demanding. It was really hard mentally to keep yourself focused and positive throughout 4.5 years it took me to get back on the pitch again. So it was a real test. But you always believe you're a type of person until you face certain adversities. You don't know for sure. And I kind of realised that was the person I hoped that I was and believed I was, because it took a lot to get to that stage. And there's lots of tough times. But there's probably only once in the whole 4.5 years where I was a little bit doubtful. And my wife said to me, get yourself out of bed, go again. And 2 minutes later, I'm back to being myself. So it was a tough journey. And no one that I know has ever come back from an injury like this. And definitely, I've never heard of anyone being out of the game 4.5 years and getting back on the pitch again.
Sean, you were always a sort of leader type figure at Blackpool, even though you were a much younger man back then. I remember you coming into the club secretary's office and dealing with the tickets and all that sort of thing for the rest of the players. You were club captain there for some time at Blackpool. Did it help that your natural instinct was a bit of a leader, someone who wasn't afraid of a challenge? Because this sounds like, people always say being a footballer must be the best job in the world, but I can imagine for 4.5 years, from time to time, it wasn't, was it?
No. People on the outside, obviously people love playing football. as a kid, I loved playing football. I liked playing with mates, and I never wanted to do this as a profession. As strange as it is, when I told people this isn't the career that I wanted, this isn't the future that I wanted at 16 years old, I reluctantly took my apprentice at Rotherham United, really didn't enjoy it. On two or three occasions, told the manager that I didn't want to pursue football as a career. The day that I got offered a professional contract, Ronnie Moore at the time sat me down and says, right, you've got to decide whether you want to be a footballer or a rock star. And I kind of laughed and said, well, you're not going to be pleased with this answer. So it's not easy. You know, there's highs and lows, and it's how well you deal with those kind of emotions. When you score last minute and you go on an unbelievable run and you defend for your lives and you have a man of match display, or you get promoted, or you win a player of the year, or whatever it may be, them highs are hard to achieve outside of football, you know, I presume, to get to that kind of level of euphoria and enjoyment. And then when you're out injured, when you're, you work tirelessly for two, three seasons and a manager doesn't fancy playing you and you're not doing the job that you want to do and always, you know, you're trained to do, it's tough to take. And you see so many players come out of the game, or even while they're playing, suffering with depression and different types of illnesses and addictions, because being able to control those emotions, that's pretty tough. You know, not many people get to experience that in their jobs, in their lives. So it's tough to take at times, but it's extremely rewarding as well. Financially, you know, you get yourself in a better position than most. The time off, you know, the time I got to spend with family, because you have to train for a short period of time and then you have to rest up to make sure you're well equipped for the games. It's a remarkable job. It's not as easy as people presume. And for me, you know, I never wanted to do this as a job. So it's quite ironic that I spent four and a half, nearly 5 years working to get back into a job that I didn't want in the first place. So it's quite a strange process, but it was because I faced the challenge and I'm very demanding of myself and what I expect. Even though I didn't want to do this at 16, every single day from being signed as an apprentice, I've given my best every day, 100% every day. And ultimately, that's why I've had a reasonably good career, and I've enjoyed playing in the Championship for a long period of time, because I tried, because I gave my best. And that's, I think, what people find frustrating when they sit back and they look at people and don't think they've got the desire and the determination and the pride when they're wearing a shirt. And for me, I've been fortunate that because I give my all, I've been well received by fans.
Sean, just while you're with us, I was speaking to one of your former teammates earlier, Stephen Warnock, and I just asked him for his reflections on your time as a player, and this is what he's had to say to us.
It's hard to put into words what Barks has been through. I met him at Derby, and he was such a genuine guy, and I couldn't believe what he'd been through when he was telling me. And I'm thinking, how's this guy even trying to get back from these injuries and trying to carry on? But Barks is, again, he's like me, he loves playing football, he loves being in and around it all, and I'm just so sad for him that his career, that's where I'm fortunate, where I've ended my career on my terms, his hasn't. His has ended from an injury that it was just out of his hands, that he couldn't do anything about. But credit to him, he's battled back, he's tried his hardest to get back, and he's one of the good guys in the changing room that you need. He's an example to young players of how to conduct yourself again, and it's an absolute honour to be able to call him a friend, because he's one of the top guys in football.
Nothing quite better than that, is there? Your peers talking about you like that?
No, he's a great guy, Stephen. He's had a fantastic career. We met at Derby and it didn't really fall for him particularly well. He signed expecting to play regularly and didn't, conducting himself extremely well. And obviously we were realigned together back at Burton. And he's, I don't know how old he is now, but the age he's decided to retire, I think it's because the level that he's played at and the standard he's played at throughout his career, it's hard to keep as you get older. And he probably realises that, or has decided that this is his time to knock it on the head. And it's nice to know that players can kind of make the decision at the right time. And I feel like I have. I've had control of this, but ultimately I've not managed to get back to playing from 29 years old. You know, I should have been in my prime at 29. I was at a huge club at Derby. I was club captain. You know, I was first on the team sheet under Nigel. It's tough to take, but it's almost like I've kind of weaned off first team football. You know, I haven't played since, you know, I haven't started a game since 2012, since the injury. I've had little cameo appearances for the last 2-3 minutes, 5 minutes here and there. I've been around the dressing room, but to be honest, I'm not going to miss the dressing room. I'm just going to miss going out on a Saturday. I came off against Derby about 4 weeks ago for my last appearance, and it was hard to take because you know that you're not going to get on a football pitch again. And for me, I can't just have a kick around with my mates. My knee's too bad for just messing about with a ball. So, yeah, so that's tough to take. But Stephen's a great guy in the game, really nice guy, intelligent, good footballer, obviously played at the top level and has experienced his highs and lows because he's had tough injuries and bad injuries in the past as well, and he's got over them. So it was a pleasure to spend some time at a couple of clubs with him, but unfortunately I never got to play on the pitch with him. So that's a disappointment for me because in my career he's probably one of the best players who's played at the highest level and the best level that I've come across.
Sean, just before we talk about your time with Blackpool and your time as hopefully being a rock star as well, in terms of the knee now that you know you're not going to play, will you need any more procedures? Because you know that whatever happens, I'm not trying to get back on a training ground, I'm not trying to get back on a football pitch. Will some further procedures now help you day to day, do you think?
I've had, is it 5 or 6 operations now on the knee, probably about 20 or 30 aspirations where they drain fluid out of your knee. I've had steroid jabs, Ostinol, which is like a lubricant in your joint. I suffer with arthritis. I have done for the last few years because of trying to get back to playing. You know, I'm in pain every single day. It doesn't feel like a normal knee. It feels alien to my body. Everything else, when you're kind of injury-free, everything just moves naturally and you don't feel anything. But I'm in pain quite a lot with the knee on a daily basis. So the hard thing is when you're still at a football club, you can train your body. So you can work from 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, doing your rehab, doing your strength work, doing your control work, and that gives you a better life outside of football, as well as, you know, obviously getting back to a certain level in football terms. But I've got to keep that up, so I won't be able to do loading in terms of running, playing football, squash, tennis, anything silly like that. I'll have to do road biking, swimming, things that are going to take pressure off that knee, but still allow me to exercise and to keep my strength in my legs. So I'm going to have a full knee replacement probably sooner than I would have done if I not tried to get back into football. How long that's going to be will depend on how painful it's going to be. So it's not an injury that just affects me when I'm playing football. This is an injury that affects my life. I was painting one of the bedrooms, my kids' bedrooms yesterday, and after an hour of standing on it, it balloons up, gets swelling, and I have to sit down and ice it and rest it. That happens quite regularly, you know, on quite a regular basis. So I've got to kind of treat it with care and understanding of my body. And unfortunately, yeah, it's going to affect me for the rest of my life.
Sean, it seems ages ago, August 2006, that you joined Blackpool. It's about 6 or 7 months after I joined this radio station, so I feel like I've been here forever. So it must feel like it's a long time ago since you joined Blackpool. Just looking down the squad list at some of your teammates from back then, I mean, you had Danny Graham as a lone player, you had big Caspers Gorks as a player, Ian Evatt, Rhys Evans was your goalkeeper, Ben Burgess, of course, who we know very well at this radio station, Andy Morrell, Keegan Parker, Scott Vernon. There were some good lads in that changing room, weren't there?
There was, and I actually spoke to Evo a couple of days ago, I spoke to Foxy last week, and one thing we always say is it's probably our most enjoyable part of our career, and that's all of us. Them 3 years I had at Blackpool, the changing room, the banter, the kind of positivity around the place, the achievements, all of that collectively probably made it my most enjoyable time in a shirt. I loved playing for Blackpool. I thought it was an amazing club. I liked that there was a story once where I was at the Squires Gate. I don't know if you've been, Andy, to Squires Gate, but
many
it's not
times.
not the prettiest of training facilities. And I think it was in the first season, we had one shower, I think, that worked for 26 lads, and all the other showers were set up nicely but weren't working. And we'd complained a few times to Simon and wanted the chairman to come down and get them fixed, and it hadn't happened. So Klaus Jorgensen and a few others, probably Wes, because he was normally the case, getting up to mischief while he was there. They bent all the showers, so they were in like heart shapes and squares and stuff like that. And they lost their head a little bit. And eventually we got 3 showers working for 25 lads, which was an absolute bonus for us. But those were the kind of things, you know, we see planes coming overhead, and, you know, we'd have to go on the beach at times to play a bit of football. And it brings the group together. There was probably 10 lads that had wives or girlfriends and kids, and we used to do stuff on a regular basis. And that's, it's quite rare in the game. You know, there's normally groups of maybe two or three lads that share time out of football, but I probably would say there's 10, 11 couples that spent time away from the football club together as by choice. And that kind of, I thought that showed on the pitch, the togetherness, the fun we had. You know, obviously that first season, it was a remarkable season, going 10 wins, getting promoted. It never felt like there was any doubt whatsoever that we were going to get promoted once we got that kind of momentum going in the second half of the season. When you got a player like Wes as well that was just out of this world. You know, there's probably three or four players that season that thought they had unbelievable seasons, but Wes was just a pleasure to play with. Best player I've ever played with by a country mile. The ability he had. It was frustrating at times as well, because when we were on Sky, he kept the ball for about 20 minutes every time he got on it. He wouldn't pass to anyone. But just a great group of lads. Great club to play for. Love my time there. And every single player that I've played with at Blackpool have said the same thing. We've seen over the last few years, it's not a perfect club, ran perfectly. They've gone through so much adversity over the last however many years, but I've not heard one person say they didn't enjoy it at the time there. And I don't think my wife's, we lived in St Anne's for 6 months, and I don't think my wife's ever forgiven me for moving away from Blackpool to Derby. I don't think she's ever forgiven me, because she loved the way of life. She loved the club, loved the group. And I absolutely loved my time there.
That promotion season, I remember Blackpool losing on a Tuesday night at Carlisle, and people phoning in the radio station, people saying, what's going on? This is meant to be one of our best seasons in recent years. We've won one match all season. Simon's job was perhaps on the line at that stage, Sean. And then, as you say, to win 10 matches, you won 12 out of your last 13 games that season. The only defeat was at your old club, Rotherham. And to go up at Wembley in the style that you did, once you were on that run, it was never in doubt, was it?
No, there's not many times in football that you can say there's no doubt in our minds going out onto a pitch. You always have that cause for concern or doubts. And going out to Wembley, not one of us doubted for a second that we weren't going to win. And it doesn't happen very, very much in football. It really doesn't. You don't have that confidence. You have belief, you know, when you're going on runs. But you know, playoff finals, it can go either way. It depends who turns up on the day. But we knew that we had the quality with players like Wes and Keegan, who was on fire at the time. And we knew we had the experience with people like Jacko and myself and Evo and Andy Morell and Klaus Jorgensen. We had experience. We had a real kind of blend. And I think that's what Simon did best. He signed great lads, great players, experience in that division. And we just bonded. You just bonded straight away. And I think Simon's had a fantastic career in management to date. I think it was very unfortunate at Sunderland. You know, it's a hell of a task to take on Sunderland at that point with what they faced. And I think he would have probably done a better job if he'd have stayed till the end of the season. I think he would have had an opportunity to keep them up. But he's done extremely well everywhere he's been. He's had so many promotions from League One and really kind of competed in the Championship level. So he did extremely well getting the right blend of players, some real quality, nice set of lads. And went out to that pitch every game, second half of the season, believing we were going to win. And we knew if we kept it tight defensively and let the players play, that we had enough quality to hurt teams, which it proved to be the case in the second half of the season.
It was pretty evident when Simon signed you, wasn't it, Sean, that you'd been a centre-half for Rotherham. He played you as a right-back. What was that like?
I played a season in centre midfield for Rotherham. We were down by Christmas, but I had a season in centre
midfield.
Went
that well, did it?
It went that well, yeah. Probably the lowest points ever in the Championship. We didn't concede many because the two centre-halves had a fag on behind me. So I played centre-half at Rotherham. I played right-back at Rotherham, played centre midfield at Rotherham. So I'd kind of got a taste for different positions. It was only really the season before I signed for Blackpool that I played centre-half. I played in bits and bobs, but at that stage, all them years ago, you tended to have to be an experienced player to play centre-half. You know, you almost had your solid two centre-halves that have played 300-400 games each. You know, at the Championship level, they're always a partnership. I think it's changed a little bit in the last few years where they're willing to risk younger players without the experience that are probably more athletically kind of developed for the centre-half position now, with pace and strength and power. But at that stage, it was about position. It was about knowing the game. And we had Chris Swales, Martin McIntosh, Guy Branston, all these players in front of me for centre-half. So I ended up coming in at right-back. I had a long throw, which Ronnie Moore absolutely loved people with long throws. Rob Scott had about, he was the right-back at the time, had probably about six or seven shoulder operations because of the amount of long throws he had to put into the box. And fortunately enough for me, I could throw the ball. So all of a sudden I get a little sniff at right back, and then they played me there and I did well at the end of that season. So I'd had a few different positions, but signed as a centre half. Simon said that me and Jacko would start the season, two centre halves. And then he signed Ian Everett, and I thought, I know where this is going. We played away at Bristol City. I can't remember who they played on the left wing, and they just used to boot the ball to the left wing. He'd win his header, and then they'd get on the attack, and they caused problems in the first few games like that. So I ended up going, Simon pulled me and said, look, do you mind playing right back? I'm going to boot the ball on to him, win your headers, and then just don't have to support too much, just kind of keep position. And I played in that game, played well, and then Evo played and played well, and I thought, this is where I'm staying then this season. So I ended up playing every game at right back for the next 100 games or so. It's only really the last 6 months at Blackpool that I got to go back to my favourite position of centre half.
I think you might be, just looking back then at that Bristol City team lineup, big Enoch Shawumny might be the player that you're referring to. Yeah, you won 4-2 that day. Scott Vernon, Michael Jackson scored, Keegan Parker, Danny Graham. I've been in Michael Jackson's company recently. He has not changed a bit. He looks like he could still play. What a player he was back then. Such an experienced head in that back line.
Yeah, he was. A great, great lad. He was one of them experienced players that was fairly quiet and kind of gentle off the pitch. And you get him on the pitch and he was aggressive, he was nasty, he'd pinch you in training, he'd kick you. And I loved playing with him. He was a brilliant guy. And just sometimes there's certain players that you have, they have an aura about them. They have something beyond being a footballer. And you kind of feel that them players will go on to management. And Jacko had that feeling about it. Everyone respected him. He didn't have to say anything, but you just respected the guy. I didn't care whether he'd played two games or 500 games. He just had something about him that you wanted to respect. And he was a lovely guy. I used to travel in from Manchester. There was me, Foxy, Jacko and Richubka all used to come from, meet at Lim Services and drive down. And if me and Foxy had had a night out, he used to come in and kind of look at us and go, oh, I'm so jealous. I wish I could still do that. Well, he's got his protein shake and he's got his bottle of water. He was gutted. And we were there having McDonald's breakfast in the morning, and he was so, so devastated that he wasn't 21 again. He loved to see the young players enjoy themselves and express themselves. And he felt that the more experienced boys did their job and let people like Wes just go and play and Foxy get on the ball. And this is just a great guy to have around. One of the best captains I've played with. Great guy, great player. Had a fantastic season that season. Him and Evo was solid throughout the whole season. And it was a big plus to get a player like him with the experience that he'd had at that club at the time.
And when you talk about players who want to go into battle, Keith Southern ticks every box, doesn't he?
Yeah, funnily enough, Keith texted me yesterday. So you do get moments where people catch up, and very, very occasionally I'll hear for someone at Rotherham or Derby, but Blackpool, it's very regular. We kind of catch up one way or another, and Keith texts me to kind of congratulate me on my career, and it's a shame that obviously the injury kind of ruined the later part of my career in football. And just a Blackpool through and through, loved the club, knew what it was like playing in the tougher times, I suppose, in the lower divisions. And I think probably one of the best players that's played at that club over the last 20 years from what I've seen in terms of what you'd expect in terms of quality, desire, aggression. It came alive for big games, scored vital goals, and was so important in not only the run to get us promoted from League One, but also the Championship as well. He was a great player for Blackpool to have, a great servant, and fantastic. I thought he got better. You know, I thought he was a decent player when I first signed, but I felt him get better the higher up he got, you know, in the division. So the more that we were kind of threatening in League One to go up to the Championship, I thought he adapted to that situation and played better. And then when we got to the Championship, I thought he was better again. Certain players can adapt to different environments and different pressures, and Keith was brilliant at that. And again, another great guy, and loved the club, loved playing for Blackpool, and had a fantastic career and great servant for the club.
Sean, did you feel when you were particularly a Championship player for Blackpool that Blackpool was unique, wasn't it? That the majority of times you'd take your own training kit home. You would not train
majority.
Well, unless you forgot it. And then
washing machine was hating us coming back from training.
You'd hate Squiresgate like the majority of other players would due to, I mean, the building's not even there anymore. It's just a training pitch. There's no building anymore. So, you know, you don't need to have nightmares about that building anymore. But Did you feel sort of unique as a club in that probably everybody else in the Championship worked in a completely different way other than yourselves?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Even though Squires Gate wasn't the most beautiful, I enjoyed going and training there every day. It had a uniqueness about it, as the club did. I remember the season before when I was at Rotherham, I knew that I wasn't likely to stay that the summer after. And we came to Blackpool, and Blackpool was probably the worst team that we'd played that season. I thought they were awful. They were lucky not to go down from League One. And they had the two stands, and it was windy, and it was later on in the season, so it was just sand on the pitch, you know, the later on in the season. You seem to get more and more sand. And I remember coming back on the way back, and I said, I'm never playing for this club. You know, it looks awful. And then 3 months later, I've signed for him. And the experience of being in the underdogs and not being run beautifully as a club necessarily, and being a bit all over the place, it was enjoyable. And you either get into that as a player and you kind of embrace it, or you don't. And as long as you've got the players that kind of laugh about it and make jokes about it and have fun about it, you end up being a positive in a strange way. And I was at Rotherham, you know, I've been at Rotherham, Blackpool, Derby and Burton. And there's only really Derby that was a big, big club in the Championship. The rest were more underdog, kind of smaller teams. So I've experienced that actually quite a lot in my career. Very similar now in terms of Burton. The standard that's between the top and the bottom, and the quality and the money spent and the infrastructure and all that is completely different for a club like Burton to compete with, you know, with the Wolves and your Derbies and your Forests and your Leeds and all that. So I've experienced it quite a bit over my career, and I've quite enjoyed that. I've enjoyed being the ones that are not expected to stay up and you survive. You know, we did that for two seasons at Blackpool before, obviously, the remarkable Holloway journey. All we was doing is surviving, staying in the league, and we did that and felt fairly comfortable doing that. We played some good stuff. We were back to the walls in some game, but yeah, to stay in this division, and I enjoyed that. I think if you know your place in the division as a club, and you know that your ultimate objective is to stay in the league, and you do that, it was a fantastic couple of seasons. And obviously before the whirlwind of what Holloway achieved beyond that is hard to kind of put into words.
There was very much a working relationship between Simon Grayson and Tony Parks. It was one, yeah, very inexperienced man in management, and one man who'd probably been there, seen it and done it. Were you at all concerned when Simon left for Leeds that what we're going to do here, and it ended up being Tony for the rest of that season, sure?
I think it's a concern, of course, yeah. Simon was a huge part of the success at Blackpool at that time, and it was important that Tony got the job because you have to have continuity. You have to have it, that moment where Simon left, you have to have it as, make a little impact as possible. So bringing Tony to come to the forefront to take over, very similar ideas. Obviously, Simon would have learnt a bit from Tony with his experience. So some of the players might have been advised by Tony and some of the way we set up. So there was, even though Simon was the manager, he still would have had a little bit of influence from Tony. And then to transfer that, he tried to keep it as simple a process to change as possible. So it wasn't a big brand new manager who came in and said, we've got to change this and we've got to change that, we've got to play this way. Sometimes that can be really detrimental to a club, and we knew our roles, we knew what we had to do. And Tony brought in some good players that second half of the season, which really helped us stay in that division. So huge plus I had to go to Tony for that second half of the season, because it could have been a lot different, but he just kept that ship steady for the remainder of the season before Holloway obviously came in.
He signed Charlie Adam at that back end of that season, didn't he, on loan? Mm-hmm. And I know you talked about Wes Houlihan already, who was a magician with the football. I remember going to a game, I think it was against Reading at Bloomfield Road. It was a draw over Easter, and Charlie Adam was playing his second or third game. I think he got sent off in his first game for Blackpool.
Yeah.
And then I saw this guy play and I thought, wow, he can play. He has got some left foot on him. What was he like?
He was a different kind of player. I think he had to adapt to the Blackpool way, the Blackpool dressing room. I think he'd used to being, obviously, at Rangers, and he's a bit flashier. He was a little bit overweight and didn't move around the pitch as well as he should have done. But he had a real quality that shone out, really, in certain games. And he was hit and miss, I think, for that last 6 months. He wasn't the Charlie Adam that ended up having the unbelievable career he's had. He was adapting to Championship life, and some games you had to accept that he wouldn't get back as quickly as you wanted, and he wouldn't get back into position and do his dirty duties almost. He wanted to get on the ball and he wanted to play football, and he seemed twice as fast going forward with the ball than he was recovering. Whether that was his fitness or whether that was the enjoyment of tracking back and tracking players, I don't know. But he quickly adapted to the squad. You know, at the start, a few of the lads were like looking, going, I don't know if he's going to fit in here because of how he was. He's quite brash, quite confident. Obviously, he used to playing for a massive club. And then he came to Blackpool and playing on, you know, training on Squires Gate and playing in front of two stands. But he did adapt over the course of the 6 months, and I think that's what held him in good stead going forward, because he'd had this tight unit of players, all close. And you know, we still see Charlie coming back to Blackpool quite a bit, and he still feels very fondly of the area and the club, and that's because of the time of his career. It was so important. You know, Blackpool was so important to him, and we could see we had a top player on our hands, and the quality that he had, his left foot was a joke at times, and he always used to try that halfway line one, and he's never stopped. And something special about a player like that will attempt things. You know, if he gets the ball off the centre half and he keeps on pinging it out to the right wing and it goes out five or six times, he doesn't lose confidence. He gets back on it again, and he knows he's got that ability to find a pass and to do something special. And that, I'm pleased that that's never gone out of his game. He's always played with the same kind of freedom and expression, and you always use his strength, which is his ability on the ball. And he had a really good 6 months, but in the second half of the season, it was remarkable that Tony managed to get him over, and then for him to sign permanently and to have the career he had after that. It's all down to his ability, because he's a fantastic footballer.
Tony Parks actually played you as a centre-half, didn't he, as well?
He did, yeah. I don't know if that was chosen or whether someone got injured. I played with Casper for a while. I think Evo might have got injured for a bit, which is why I reverted back to centre-half. And then Baptiste came in at centre-half for a bit as well with us. So I was so fit playing right-back, because I've never been a technically gifted player. But at right-back, I don't remember the time at Blackpool, I used to bomb forward. I used to try and get forward as much as I could, try and get crosses in, try and be a threat on the attack. But you put me back to centre-half, I don't want to touch the ball, and I want to kick it and I want to head it. I almost go back to a very kind of Neanderthal-type football where I go, right, do my job, head it and kick it, and that's it.
But just the centre-halves I like.
Yeah, exactly, and there's less and less of them now. But I just didn't want to mess about with the ball at the back. There's better footballers than me, so give them the ball. When I was at right-back, I felt like I got the energy, the desire to get further up the pitch, which put the left winger under a bit more pressure and kept them defensively rather than attacking me one-on-one. But when I went to centre-half from playing at right-back, it was a breeze. As long as you were switched on mentally and you got yourself in the right position, I was so fit because I'd done so many games at right-back, and you don't have to do half the run at centre-half. You just have to be more experienced and use your head and positionally be a bit more sound and be switched on for 90 minutes. And I always had that. But I was lighter, I was fitter, I was stronger. So I kind of adapted really quickly to go back to centre-half at Blackpool. And then when I went to Derby, I didn't train much. I had this knee problem quite early on, and then got it fixed and got myself back to playing again. But I was probably only training once or twice a week for one season at Derby. I trained probably half a dozen times over the whole season, but I played 43 games in a row just because I needed to play to make sure that the club were safe and secure before I had my operation. So very different times. The fittest I've been is at Blackpool. I trained every day. I missed one or two games through a thigh strain. That was it. I played 150 games in three seasons, which is some good going. But when I'm fit, when I was training regularly, I felt so comfortable at centre-half. Even though I kept it simple, I just felt that there wasn't anyone that was going to beat me for pace or beat me in the air. I just felt that was back to my best position.
In terms of that year that it was Tony Parks who finished the season, Sean, were you always sort of looking at it that year thinking, I wonder whether there's something else than Blackpool? And probably Derby were already showing signs that they were keen to bring you to Pride Park, weren't they?
It's quite early up, probably early on in the year. So probably just after Christmas, I'd heard of a few clubs watching us and showing interest. I think I'd only signed a deal maybe at the start of that season, so I still had 2 years left at the end of that current season. I'm not really one for looking elsewhere. If you sign a deal, I was happy with the money that it gave me. I was happy playing for Blackpool for 3 years. If people came in for me and wanted to sign me and the club didn't want to sell me, I could accept that, you know, because I'd already made that decision and I was happy to play as long as my contract was there. It really frustrates me when you see players sulking when they've got 2 years left and they want to go somewhere. I just think, well, don't sign the contract. If you want to get yourself out, don't sign a 3-year contract or a 4-year contract, whatever it may be. You've got to be, if you sign a long-term contract, you've got to be prepared to play your best and to play for that amount of money for that amount of time. And even though there was interest and we knew that Forest had put bids in for us, I think Derby put bids in for us, a few other clubs had showed interest, but Blackpool wanted more than they were willing to pay. For me, to go back to Nottingham, you know, I'm a Nottingham boy, so going back to the East Midlands was a nice pull. I was going to get paid a lot more money. I was going to play and test myself at a club on another level in terms of the size, expectation, pressure. I knew that Nigel had been a fan of mine for a while at that point. So I could see the positives for me personally and for a move. To go back to the Midlands, just had a baby girl at the time. It felt like the right fit, but at any stage that Blackpool didn't want to sell me, there was not going to be a moment of sulking or disappointment or frustration from my end whatsoever, because I love my time at Blackpool, and if they said you stay and I would have been happy. I wouldn't have been disappointed. I would have been happy to stay. But when the opportunity came, it just felt right to go back to the Midlands to play for Derby County in front of 30,000 fans every week. Realistically, at that point, Derby would have been a lot further up the list to be favourites to get out of the division back up to the Premier League rather than Blackpool. I think there was maybe only 7 or 8 first-team players on the books at Blackpool at that point as well. So it looked like there's two different ends of the spectrum in terms of the likelihood of getting promoted and the likelihood of getting relegated and, you know, all the different things that went on in my mind. And if I could go, then I was going to accept to go to Derby or Forest at the time. And if I wasn't, I wouldn't have been disappointed. So it worked out extremely strange, obviously, with that season, Blackpool going up and Derby finding it hard to kind of stay in the division as well. But there's nothing throughout my career and my life that I never look back on and regret things. It was the right decision at that time, but I wasn't proactively looking to go anywhere else when I was at Blackpool.
Did you get a chance to spend a few days in Ian Holloway's company, or pretty much were you off for pre-season, Sean?
I was in, as everyone else was. Ollie kind of said, there's going to be opportunities for you, there's going to be clubs coming in. He was honest enough to say, look, if you can go to a big club, really push for the Premiership, get paid better, go back home, I don't want to stand in your way. But ultimately, the chairman's got to get what he's happy with you in terms of a figure. And I said, well, that's fair enough. I'll just leave it in your hands, yours and the chairman's hands, and let me know what happens. So I came back for pre-season. He loved shape, so so much of his time in training was to set up shape and how he wanted to play. And he wanted his centre-halves to come and get it off the keeper and ping balls out to the left-hand side and the right-hand side. And after my first session, I'm thinking, I can't do this. I can't ping a ball 50 yards to someone's feet. But he keeps on reiterating them things. And after a few weeks, you kind of start to get a feel of how he wants to play, how he wants to set up. And he was so positive with, he really believed that this club could go and challenge. And I think at that point, it's fair to say the lads weren't sucked in. They liked him. They liked his energy and his character and all that. But you can't change, I think, the mindset instantly that you're a team that's going to be struggling at the bottom end of the division. You're going to be fighting for your lives to stay in the division. You're not a bad footballing team, but you're not on the same level as some of the teams in this division that have money to throw around and real quality. And he's going, we'll be challenging for the playoffs this year, quite early on. And you're kind of looking, going, this guy's mental. He's as crazy as he looks on the TV and on radio. But he believed it. And it was only a few months into it, you started to see when they played Derby at Pride Park, we watched them and I thought, these are going up. They were so good. The way they played, you can tell that all the players knew what they needed to do. Charlie was the best player that I saw that season. He was coming and taking the ball, demanding the ball off the centre-halves and just playing football. Brett was on fire at the time, and Fletch, and you know, all of them were just playing out of the skin on another level to I'd ever seen them, individually and as a team. And it's just remarkable he managed to get them playing that way, and he changed a lot of the players that were there, the mindset and how positivity and how you have to believe, and the work he did on the training pitch as well. At times it was quite boring because I had him probably about a month. Shape's not the most exciting training session you can do, you know, because you have to stand in your position. It's really slow and methodical and carefully structured. You want to go and kick a ball around like you do when you're kids, but it wasn't the most interesting sessions at the start, but you could quite quickly see how important it was going to be over the course of the season. And I had about a month with him, I think, before I actually signed for Derby, and I really enjoyed it. He was just the all the way that you see. There's no kind of mask or there's no disguise. That's exactly how he is with the lads. And yeah, he's good fun to play for and good fun to have in around the dressing room, because he's just a positive, happy, vibrant character and guy. And he obviously got the best of them players. And I honestly don't think that another manager could have done it. I really don't. And he was very lucky that set of group believed in him and believed his philosophy, because they just did what he asked and beyond, probably, to get promoted that season was quite incredible.
I've been reading a little bit of a Wikipedia page, which is about you, Sean, so we can't take everything as completely true, but there is a quote from you after Blackpool went up that year, and it says that you said, "I'd make the same choice. It's funny how things work out. Obviously, I made the move with a long-term view to getting into the Premier League. I looked at the reality. Everything was right. A bigger club, more money, and I don't care what some say. That's a big thing. I had an offer to improve my life, move back to my family and do the right thing for my two-year-old daughter. People go on about how much footballers earn, but it's a short career. And outside the top level, you need to be careful and do the right thing for your family. I was looking at one day playing in the Premier League, and everything at Derby seemed right. I was delighted for Blackpool, but there is bound to be a little thought of what if. What Ian Holloway has done there is beyond comprehension." Those were your thoughts when Blackpool got promoted. Mm-hmm. And I don't think in any walk of life, Sean, anyone would turn around and say anything different than fair play.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It's exactly the same as that. Nothing changes from my time when I left. I was actually at the playoff final and celebrating with the lads at the time, because obviously a lot of good friends got promoted that day and it changed their lives. It's slightly different these days with the money that's invested in the Championship clubs, but at that point you have to look both footballing terms, financial, best for your family, all them things come into play, and it was a collective decision to move. I could have said no, you know, I could have stayed at Blackpool, but the likelihood is that it was going to be a tougher life at Blackpool and a tougher job to stay in the division, and everything pointed to come back home. I've retired now, and I've already got to look at, in a month's time, paying the bills. You know, nothing changed. I've been good with my whatever I've earned throughout my career. I've not spent it on flash cars and watches and all the things that people expect these footballers to spend the money on, all the materialistic things. It's not how I am. You know, I've saved pretty much every penny that I've saved and that I've earned, and I still have to get a job at the end of it. So these decisions, when you're going through your career, you have to take on. It's not the life that most people think it is. If you're fortunate enough to earn the kind of money that some of the players do and they can put their feet up once they finish football, great. But lots of us don't. So there's so many different reasons to come back to Derby, and I felt it was the right decision. And I never look back and go, well, I could have played in the Premier League, because if I hadn't have been sold by Blackpool, I don't know if Charlie would have been bought. You know, I don't know if they would have had the finances to buy Charlie. If they hadn't bought Charlie, they wouldn't have got promoted. It's just how things work, and I never look back with regret. I was delighted for all the lads and the club. I was there celebrating the same as all the other fans were. I was absolutely delighted, and I'd never regret the choice I made. And the biggest positive thing, probably the most positive thing from coming to Derby was working with Nigel Clough, and the respect I have for that man and how he's looked after me from the moment of me having the injury. I don't know of another manager that would personally take care of a player like he has done with me. And it's not, I wouldn't say that he's looked after me. That's not how I'd describe it. I'd describe it as stood by me, you know, in terms of as the right thing to do. As a human, he's made sure he's given me every opportunity to play football again. And I think that's because he knows what I'm like as a person. He knows I'm honest. He knows that I care. I played a season for him when I needed an operation. It was detrimental to my performances and my career at that point to play without having the op. But he needed to be safe, and the club needed to be safe in the division. And I felt it was my responsibility to keep going until we were mathematically safe at the end of the season. And them things he remembers. And I'm very fortunate that I've played for someone like him. And You know, obviously the time at Burton, I got on the pitch against Derby after 4.5 years, and he brought me on for the last 30 seconds, and every single moment of my recovery was worth it for that 30 seconds. I've learned so much about myself over the last 6 years, and I've learned so much about football and about individuals and players and managers. And for me to have kind of crossed paths with Nigel is probably the most positive thing about me moving from Blackpool to Derby.
You were known as Reggie very affectionately at Blackpool, weren't you? I don't think it went to Derby with you, did it?
He didn't know. There was already a Reggie there. There was a Luke Varney, and they called him Reggie. I signed and I got in the changing room. So obviously I've always been known for being a little bit different, slightly obscure footballer, I suppose, in terms of in the dressing room. And at that point, skinny jeans were nowhere to be seen unless you were in a band called The Strokes. So I turned up with my skinny jeans on, kind of a long kind of drainpipe coat, and had a side parting that was slicked back. And I think it was Merce going, "Bloody hell, he looks like Reggie Kay." And then that was it. Everyone started bursting out laughing. They thought I was Kosovan or Polish or something. So they were just taking the mickey out of me. And I'm sitting there thinking, they obviously don't realise I'm English here, because they didn't know my name at the time. I'd just come training. And I don't know if they thought I was maybe Latvian as well, because obviously the Velikon coming in. So they were taking the mickey out of me, and then obviously they realised I was then English and understood what they were on about. So then I was Reggie ever since at Blackpool, and all the lads at Blackpool, you know, the Evos and Foxes, still call me Reggie. Never changed.
When you're a footballer, you get a different nickname at each club you go to, and you've got to remember yeah. which WhatsApp group you're talking yeah. in to know whether they're speaking to you or not. Just in conclusion, Sean, it's been a career that probably hasn't been the career that you had mapped out, although at the start of it, maybe you didn't want the career in the first place, and being a rock star was more important to you at times. Is music a big thing to you?
It is, yeah. The only reason I didn't become a rock star is because I can't play anything. So I had to accept that. I could kick a ball around and head it, but I couldn't play any guitars or, you know, or the drums or anything. So, yeah, I love music. There's not many players that I've come across that like the kind of eclectic mix that I like. You know, if I decide I want to talk about Velvet Underground, I'm literally getting, you know, complete zombie-like faces. And I was actually at the I got tickets to see Bjork at the Winter Gardens when I was at Blackpool. And I couldn't believe how hard it was to give away a free Bjork ticket to come with me. Literally all the lads just laughed at me and went, "What are you on about? Why on earth am I coming to see Bjork?" I ended up getting Casper Gorks. He hadn't got a clue who she was. And he'd come and he's going, "This is like a rave." I was like, yeah. So, yeah, music's a big thing. And actually, when I got injured, I treated myself to a brand new kind of record set, you know, stereo system. And I'd always wanted LPs but never got round to it because you move around the country in different houses. I didn't want to carry, you know, 1,000 records with me or whatever. So when I got injured, I was on this machine, which I had to be on 10 hours a day, and I was searching on eBay and I saw a 200 LPs for 400 quid or something like that. And it had like the likes of Blondie, Pink Floyd, Beatles, Stones, Bob Dylan, you know, stuff like that. And I thought I'd give it a go. So now I've got probably 2,500 records, and I'm obsessed with crate digging and going into charity shops and picking up records and stuff like that. So yeah, but probably quite unique in terms of my music sense compared to most of the lads. I've had a career that has gone beyond what I could ever expected and ever believe was capable. It's when I was at Rotherham, I thought, well, if I play a first team game, I can be pretty proud of that. And then I played my first team game, and then once I played my first ever first team game, I thought, well, if I can get to 50 appearances, wow, what an achievement that would be. And I got to 50, and then you get to 100, and you put yourself little milestones along the way. And I never believed that I could play for a club the size of Derby. You know, even when I was at Rotherham and Blackpool playing in the Championship and doing pretty well, that felt like on another level. The infrastructure, the things that were given to you in terms of the help, you have PAs to run around and do stuff, and I didn't like it. I didn't like certain bits of that because the lads would just come and I want to go to this bar or whatever, and I want a table, or I want to go for some food with my wife, and get someone to do it. And I'm like, this is a completely different world, completely alien to me. But to achieve what I've achieved, and probably my greatest achievement is getting on the pitch again. So even though, you know, I was nearly at 400 games at 29, I probably would have got 600-700 games realistically. I think I would have gone into my late 30s with how I feel physically in myself. Even though I've not got to probably the 600-700 games that looked likely for a long period, I've achieved something that I don't think that anyone else has done in football in terms of getting back on a pitch after an injury like mine, after a 4.5 year absence. So I feel very privileged, very fortunate, even though it's not the job that I would have chose at 16, how privileged and fortunate I am and blessed I am to be able to play professional football from 16 to 35 is hard to explain. And, you know, some people can be quite bitter about footballers and what they get and what kind of lives they live, but it's not as easy as it looks. It's not as simple as it looks on the outside. But I'd be disappointed if any footballer doesn't feel privileged to have this as their job, because it's such a unique experience. It's such a privileged experience to play football for a living. To kick a ball around for your job is just what an honour it is. And I feel very blessed to have done it, even though it wasn't what I would have chose at 16. I look back in retrospect and say, well, what a first 20 years in work environment I've had, and how lucky I am to experience some of the things. And the 3 years at Blackpool were right up there as well. Loved my time there. Loved everything about the club. Been back on numerous occasions and will go back as well. So very privileged and very fortunate.